At least 85 people were killed when troops loyal to Bakiev shot into crowds of protesters in early April. Demonstrators were protesting against what they called widespread corruption and demanded that Bakiev remove his family members from top leadership positions. An interim vice premier says Bakiev may also be charged with abuse of power. The Kremlin has signaled support for Kyrgyzstan's interim government and has pledged aid. For NPR News, I'm Jessica Gallagher in Moscow.
There's a growing sports scandal in India. Investigators are checking a premier cricket tournament for financial improprieties. The commissioner of the Indian Premier League has been suspended and accused of fixing deals to decide which teams could join his league. Lalit Modi says he's done nothing wrong and says he'll take full responsibility for his actions if charges are proved. I'm Korva Coleman, NPR News in Washington.
Support for NPR comes from the William T. Grant Foundation, supporting research to improve the lives of young people, online at wtgrantfoundation.org.
Hi, I'm Kevin Kelly. On the Tuesday edition of Live and Local, we'll hear about upcoming concerts by two area choral groups. This Saturday in Champaign, the Chorale will give its annual Young Artists Scholarship Concert under the direction of Julie Byler. And on May 11th, the Decatur Choral Society presents the Opus 24 Spring Concert, directed by Milton Scott. Live and Local airs weekdays from noon to 1 on FM 90.9.
Support for WILL comes from World Harvest International and Gourmet Foods on the corner of 6th and University in Champaign, providing Champaign-Urbana with a wide array of foods from around the world, including cheeses, olives, spices, hot sauces, olive oils, and more. World Harvest invites you to join them in supporting public radio.
From WILL, Illinois Public Media, this is Focus. Good morning. I'm Celeste Quinn, sitting in for David Inge this hour. Our producers are Harriet Williamson and Martha Deal. Our technical director this morning is Henry Frain. The Southern Poverty Law Center reports this spring the number of right-wing extremist groups in the U.S. grew dramatically in 2009. This follows a decade when these groups contracted and largely fell from view. This morning, we'll take a look at these groups and the reasons for the growth in their numbers. Our guest is Mark Potok of the Southern Poverty Law Center. The Southern Poverty Law Center is a civil rights organization based in Alabama. One of its missions is to track and report on the activities of hate groups. Mark Potok is the director of the Southern Poverty Law Center's Intelligence Project and editor of its quarterly journal, Intelligence Report. The journal's focus for its spring 2010 issue is the report Rage on the Right. Listeners, I invite you to join the discussion with your questions and comments. Join us by telephone or by email. The phone number in the Champaign-Urbana area is 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Our toll-free number is 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. Our email address is will-talk@illinois.edu. Before joining the Southern Poverty Law Center in 1997, Mark Potok was a reporter at newspapers including USA Today, the Dallas Times-Herald, and the Miami Herald. 333-9455, 800-222-9455, and will-talk@illinois.edu. Mark Potok, good morning. How are you?
Thank you for having me.
My pleasure. So how does the Southern Poverty Law Center define an extremist group? Who do you want to track and follow?
Well, we don't really have a definition of extremist groups per se. What we do is we are currently run three lists. We count and sort of enumerate these groups every year. The longest running list for us has been a list of hate groups. And what we consider hate groups are groups which say on their websites, on their platform statements, in the writings or speeches of their leader, that an entire group of other human beings are somehow less, or less by virtue of their class characteristics. All white people are blue-eyed devils. All black people are, you know, criminals. All the Jews are whatever it may be. So it has nothing to do with, it's a strictly ideological thing. It has nothing to do with criminality or violence or any kind of estimate we're making like that. So that is one strand. We also list patriot groups, so-called patriot groups, which includes militias, militias being really the armed wing of the patriot movement. Patriot groups are groups essentially that are very involved in conspiracy theories and which see the federal government as the primary enemy out there. So typically they think that the federal government or a cabal, a sort of evil cabal within the federal government, is involved in secret plans to impose martial law in the United States, typically, they say, with the aid of foreign troops, to then throw all kind of liberty-loving Americans who resist into concentration camps, often said to have already been built and maintained by FEMA, and ultimately to force the United States into a kind of socialistic New World Order, quote-unquote, or one-world government. You know, people will remember the militia movement from the 90s when it was very hot. What we're seeing right now is a second wave of the militias. The third sector, really, that we're tracking are what we call nativist extremist groups. And these are groups that are not merely opposed to immigration or agitating or working for lower levels of immigration, you know, writing their congressmen or holding rallies or whatever it may be. These are groups that actually go out and confront or harass people who they suspect are undocumented. So typically, they're, you know, some of the groups are on the border with guns. Others are essentially hassling people at day labor hiring centers, or in a few cases, they are harassing people who they think are trying to hire people at day labor centers. So, you know, that list, the nativist extremist list, is our attempt to sort out the relatively, you know, the essentially democratic anti-immigration groups with those groups that go beyond.
So how dramatic has the growth in these groups been over the last year?
Well, the hate groups went up a very little bit. They would have gone up substantially if not for essentially an accident of history, the collapse of a neo-Nazi group called the American National Socialist Workers Party. That fell apart in late 2008 simply because its leader was sent to prison, or actually to jail, where he was tried, and he's now about to go to prison. In any case, we've never had a higher count. It's 932 by our count, you know, nearly 1,000 hate groups out there. The nativist extremist groups, much really to our surprise, continued to grow very rapidly and, in fact, expanded by about 80%, very nearly doubled. But by far the most dramatic growth was in the Patriot movement, the militia movement, where we saw, 363 new groups appear last year in 2009. That works out to about a 244% increase over the year before. So that is, you know, all told, you look at the expansion on all these sectors of the radical right, and it's a fairly amazing picture.
This is Focus. Good morning. I'm Celeste Quinn, sitting in for David Inge this hour. We have a news note to bring to our listeners' attention. At Parkland College, the Parkland College on Mattis Avenue, the facility has been declared safe. The emergency ordnance disposal team found no threat at the site. All employees are permitted to enter the building and return to work. All classes scheduled at Parkland College on Mattis will resume this afternoon at 1 p.m. All classes starting at 1 o'clock or later, including evening classes, will continue as normal. That is from Parkland College. There was a threat earlier today to that Parkland College campus. This is Focus. This morning, our guest is Mark Potok. He's the director of the Southern Poverty Law Center's Intelligence Project and editor of its quarterly journal, Intelligence Report. We're talking with him this morning about the number of extremist groups in the U.S. and how they've grown. They grew dramatically in 2009, according to the center. So why have we seen this increase in these groups, Mark?
Well, there are a lot of things going on. You know, at the most kind of esoteric level, I would say, you know, you see these things historically in this country and other countries at times really of great social or socioeconomic change. So, you know, we have seen real explosions of the radical right, or one might call them backlashes, you know, after the slaves are freed, after women get the right to vote, when there are very large waves of Catholic immigration in the 20s, at a time when the country is very much dominated by Protestants, you know, when the gay rights movement gets going and so on. And there are a lot of similar things going on in our world today. So I think to answer the question, I think there are really three main drivers that we're seeing out there. One is essentially racial. It's the changing demographics of this country. The Census Bureau has predicted that in the year 2050, whites will lose their majority in this country. And that coupled with close to 15 years of fairly high levels of non-white immigration and kind of apotheosized or represented, really, in the election of Barack Obama, a black man to the White House. All that has come together to make at least some people out there, some whites, feel very uncomfortable, sometimes frustrated, sometimes very angry. And what we're seeing in terms of a backlash is essentially the feeling of, you know, this is not the country that my white Christian forefathers built. It has somehow been stolen from me and my kind. That's certainly not the reaction of most whites, but I think it's fairly significant out there, and certainly in the world I cover, and the radical right. People who are interested in race have that year 2050 more or less imprinted on their brain. The second really leg of what's driving this growth, or major leg at least, is the economy in general. And that ranges from the many millions of people who are either unemployed and in trouble or very much fear being unemployed in the immediate future. There is also anger, economic anger, over the huge bailouts and over the idea that it was the miserable bankers and auto executives and so on who kind of got us into this place, who seem to have benefited from the bailouts, while many, many people feel that the American kind of working man or woman received nothing. So there's a real populist anger out there about the economy, and it's also related to very large trends, the movement of industrial jobs overseas, which is really a part of economic globalization, and so on. So it's that kind of rage, too, is being channeled into the radical right, at least in many instances. I mean, essentially, people are in trouble or fear that they're about to be in trouble or their kids or relatives are in trouble. And rather than trying to understand the very complex kind of overall picture of what's happening out there, it is much easier to focus one's anger on an enemy. It's the federal government. It's the Mexicans who are moving into my neighborhood. It's illegal aliens and so on. Finally, I think the third piece of it is really the role that ostensibly mainstream politicians and cable news commentators have had in pushing conspiracy theories and demonizing propaganda and, in some cases, patent racism into the mainstream. So what I'm saying is that when people like Michelle Bachmann, the congresswoman from Minnesota, says that Obama is secretly building political re-education camps for our children, when former Congressman Tom Tancredo from Colorado says that Mexico has a secret plan to invade and reconquer the American Southwest, when Glenn Beck on Fox News says that FEMA is secretly, or at least speculates that FEMA may be secretly running a set of concentration camps out there, these kinds of things are actually believed, although each of the things I've mentioned have absolutely no basis in reality. They're made up out of whole cloth. The reality is that there are millions of people out there listening to the Bachmans and the Becks of the world who actually take them seriously. These are people, after all, in a position of some authority. So I think that a lot of people out there are very frightened, and as I say, these mainstream or ostensibly mainstream figures are not only not helping, they're very much pouring fuel on the fire.
Hmm. Let's take a telephone call now from a listener in Bloomington, Illinois, line 4. Good morning.
I would say that you're doing the same thing, that the Glenn Becks and the Fox, Fox people and the CNN and the NBC people are, by saying what you're saying. See, it's like there's either the right or the left. It just depends on who gets in office. And I have grown up in the Midwest, in the Southwest. I lived there. That's where I grew up. I live here now. But I can tell you that the Southwest is a bed of coals, hot coals. There's a lot of problems going on out there that people don't understand and don't know. And a lot of their problems are caused by people coming across the border. And I'm not going to pick on illegals. I'm not going to pick on any one kind of person because it's not up here. It's Polish and it's Lithuanian and it's Russian. The sad fact is, and this is where the aim is at. The average Joe out there is worried about their bottom dollar. They're not worried about racial profiling. They're not worried about getting putting a, you know, somebody and saying, well, this because he's a certain color. It's all about, the money factor. It's all about how much are we spending to take care of people who don't even live here. That's where it comes down to in the whole country. Our welfare system has been giving money left and right to people who don't deserve it. And I agree with them 100%. I'm tired of paying for somebody else's kid to go to school. You know what it takes to put a kid through school?
I
can't even go to college because, I mean, I think it's unfair to me that these guys are getting sent to college and I'm not. So how's that for injustice?
I'm going to jump in now and ask our guest to respond. The caller has raised a number of hot button topics. Mark Potok?
Yes, that's true. I mean, you know, he starts out saying SPLC, the Southern Poverty Law Center, is doing the same thing. In other words, what I was accusing various politicians and commentators of was simply lying, and lying in a way that demonizes certain opponents, be they Mexicans or federal government workers, and so on. And that really is my main response to the caller. Is we're not out there telling falsehoods. We're not out there blathering on about death panels or about secret FEMA concentration camps or about secret cabals inside the government which are working for the shadowy New World Order. We're trying to point out that this kind of talk does nothing to help us as a democracy or as a society move forward. You know, our position is not... we're not an open borders group, as many people like the caller have accused us of being, or the so-called treason lobby. Our idea is, I think, a reasonable one, which is that we absolutely do need to have a real debate about immigration. I agree with the caller that there are many problems in places like Arizona in particular, caused by the essentially broken immigration system. But we think that the debate on immigration ought not to be a debate about fantasy, paranoid conspiracy theories. In other words, let's really talk about the immigration system. Let's not talk about why those Mexicans are secretly planning to invade and reconquer the 7 southwestern American states. And that goes for a lot of other things he said. I mean, I think it's certainly true that many of the people out there, in particular in the Tea Party world, are very angry and very worried, and perhaps very reasonably so, about the huge amount of spending that the government has undertaken since undertaking bailouts and so on, dealing with the catastrophic economy. That's a legitimate point of view, and it's not one which we particularly agree or disagree with. It's really out of our bailiwick.
This is Focus on WILL, Illinois Public Media. Good morning. I'm Celeste Quinn in this hour for David Inge. Our guest this morning is Mark Potok of the Southern Poverty Law Center. Listeners, you can join us with a telephone call or by email. The number in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455. The toll-free number, 800-222-9455. And our email address is will-talk@illinois.edu. Let's take another call, a listener in Urbana on line one. Good morning.
Thank you. The previous caller had a great repetition of misinformation again this morning, but I would like to point out one of the mistakes, errors he repeated, and that is that the illegal aliens are feeding off our welfare system. We virtually did away with our welfare system about 15 years ago. And it's simply laughable to say that they are living on welfare. We don't have welfare. And that's all I care to say.
Okay, thanks.
Agree. I mean, I think there's a lot to what the caller just said. And there's an awfully, I'm not going to accuse the previous caller of being racist, but, you know, there's an awful lot of the ring of, welfare queens out there and their Cadillacs with their millions of children
I just don't think it's a realistic picture of the way the welfare system really works as a general matter. It was reformed in a fairly harsh way, as this most recent caller said, or suggested, by the Clinton administration. So I think that's really, he's quite right. You know, look, it's worth saying, there is no doubt when you look at the immigration situation in general, that there are some costs. One of the biggest costs is the emergency room costs of treating people with immediately threatening injuries and diseases and so on. And it is true that people who are not documented in this country do have to be treated in emergency rooms if they come to them and are injured in such a way that it demands immediate attention. But the reality is that so hospitals and generally local government does accumulate costs around undocumented immigrants. At the same time, though, those undocumented immigrants are paying very large amounts of money into the Social Security system that they will never get out. That's typically because they're working with fake Social Security numbers and so on. So there have been a lot of studies that have shown that overall, the money contributed by undocumented workers is actually more than they are pulling out in schools for their kids, hospitals, and so on. But there's a disparity or an unfairness, to say the least, in that it's the federal government that is essentially making out, that's being subsidized in its budget, while state and local governments often do go into debt or do have to pay money that they would otherwise not have to pay because of the immigration situation.
And we take another call now from a listener in Charleston. Line 2, hello.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. To address your third point, the third factor of causes that you had addressed.
Sure.
And there was a documentary, I think it was called Outfoxed, and they leveled a similar charge to, and I can't think of the broadcaster's name, he has a pretty well-known segment he does. Stephen Colbert did a spoof on it. I can't think of the guy's name.
Hannity, perhaps? Maybe Sean Hannity, or I remember Colbert attacked also, somebody else, financial guy.
But this person, unfortunately I can't remember his name, but I think Fox is pretty common for this type of broadcasting. They have, they brought a person in who lost a father to the 9/11 tragedy. And then this person, a young man, actually spoke out against our government's reaction to it, and that kind of flipped the interviewer around. He didn't expect that. So the interviewer, and I can't remember his name, unfortunately, but he's definitely a common Fox face, he got really hostile with this kid. And then in future segments of his program, defamed this kid and questioned his integrity and, like, almost accused him of being a terrorist. And what came about is this kid tried to sue the broadcaster, the interviewer, unfortunately, again, I can't remember his name, but it wouldn't go to court, and it was because the lawyer he tried to get basically said, and this is all according to the documentary, that this person lies so much that he's not really liable for his word. So my question then to address your third cause is, how do we fix or how do we rein in these speakers of misinformation? Because according to the documentary again, these people aren't really news broadcasters. They're like entertainment news. And because of that, it's okay for them to say anything. Instead of reporting sources, they'll say, well, people say or people have said, you know what I mean? And it's just like they're propagating their own misinformation. So sorry for the long-winded call.
Yeah, could it have been Bill O'Reilly?
Yes, ma'am. Thank you so much. Bill O'Reilly. Thank you very much. And I'll sit back and listen. Thank you.
Okay, all right.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a great question. I really do. It is just remarkable what some people say. I mean, on the air, and are not contradicted by their bosses. Their mistakes are never corrected. And these shows, a lot of these shows, O'Reilly's show, Lou Dobbs' show until he was finally thrown off CNN, Glenn Beck's and so on, you know, will never correct a mistake. I mean, it's basically never happened. I think the answer, what we've tried very much to do, is to sort of name and shame these people to the extent it can be done. We fought, specifically us at the Southern Poverty Law Center, fought a very long battle with Lou Dobbs
on CNN, callers will, or rather listeners will remember that Dobbs spent a segment virtually every night for years and years and years on his show, which was 5 days a week on CNN. He spent attacking essentially immigrants, and in a very large number of cases, defaming immigrants with completely false allegations. Ideas like immigrants were bringing leprosy to this country. At one point, he said one-third of American prison cells are filled with, quote-unquote, criminally legal aliens. He endorsed the idea that Mexico had this secret plan, the so-called Plan de Aztlan, to reconquer the American Southwest. You know, I think what really happened with Dobbs was that eventually so many people, certainly not only SPLC, but many thousands of individuals, other human rights and immigrant rights organizations and so on, made such a stink about Lou Dobbs's falsehoods, his really defamatory propaganda, that it became more and more uncomfortable for CNN. Ultimately, people I think will remember last November, Dobbs was finally forced off the air at a reported cost of $8 million to CNN to buy out his contract. So, you know, that kind of thing seems like important work to do, and it is certainly not only the province of civil rights organizations like us. I mean, this is something that individuals can do, and in particular, it seems to me it's important for people who are, say, constituents of Michelle Bachmann to call and write their congresswoman to say, you know, it's well and fine to dislike the Obama administration's policies even vehemently, but to simply lie about them, to say that the president wants to set up death panels to decide whether your grandmother will live or die, is not only not helpful to democracy and any kind of moving forward of this country, it's absolutely destructive. So I've not seen Outfoxed. I can't really speak to the what the documentary said. But I won't forget one particular report on the O'Reilly Factor, which I've been on a number of times, actually, in which the allegation was made by a quote-unquote Fox criminal analyst. This was this man's title as he spoke to Bill O'Reilly on the O'Reilly Factor, that there were hundreds and hundreds of lesbian gangs running around the country with pink pistols. They were raping and otherwise molesting middle school girls with sex toys bought on the internet, and it went on in this vein for about 10 minutes. I mean, it was this unbelievably lurid report illustrated with footage. Well, it turned out the whole thing was made up. It was entirely bogus. The footage came from unrelated incidents, and, you know, after we did essentially an investigative story showing how completely false this was, you know, they were forced to entirely retract virtually everything that was said on that segment. But it's important work, and I absolutely agree with the caller. I mean, we've got to try and root these people out because they do pose as news anchors when they are people. Not only are they not journalists, but they don't even limit themselves to opinion based on the facts. They make up the facts to support their opinions.
Mm. As a journalist back in the day, you covered the rise of the militia movement in the 1990s. Are there similarities between then and now, or do we have a different landscape 20 years later?
The similarities are remarkable in certain ways. I mean, first of all, of course, it was under another Democratic administration that was seen as relatively liberal. And the nature of the militias of the patriot groups back then was very similar in that they believed in all the same conspiracy theories that they believe in now. You know, it was a little bit different. A lot of it was focused on, of course, Bill Clinton. And, you know, that included the idea for the Patriots, so-called, back then, that Bill Clinton was really the one who blew up the Oklahoma City Federal Building. But there are also some differences between that period and now. I think that the anger out there is quite clearly broader based in the society. And also the role, the third factor the last caller just talked about, the role of politicians and commentators and so on was much less important back then. There, of course, a lot of the militias had sympathizers on talk radio, on AM talk radio. And they had Helen Chenoweth, who was then a congresswoman from Idaho, who was essentially mouthing their rhetoric. But outside of that, they had very little in the way of mainstream support. I think that's much, much less true today. A final difference I'd point out is that the militia movement back in the 90s really exploded and became very violent very quickly, at least in many quarters, as a result of Waco. That was the spark that really ignited the militia movement back then. What we're seeing right now is a very, very rapid growth in the number of these groups, but we haven't really, it seems, had the spark yet. We haven't had a Waco to set the thing on fire. So it's a scary time, I think, but the thing hasn't really exploded quite yet.
Yeah. Also today we have the Internet and what we call social media, and that seems to me we can spread opinions and facts and untruths. We can move all that stuff around very quickly.
That's right. And so you see ideas like the FEMA conspiracy theory traveling around incredibly rapidly, much more so than back in the mid-90s, which was, after all, the very dawn of the Internet era for most of us. One of the results of that we're seeing is a huge amount of cross-pollinization between these groups. So, for instance, you see people in the Patriot groups, the militia groups, have virtually wholesale adopted the idea of the secret Mexican invasion, an idea which really originated in the nativist groups and the Minutemen-type groups. In the same way, the old Minutemen groups have adopted, by and large, the idea of FEMA concentration camps and the New World Order and the Constitution being stolen and all the rest of it. So I think, yes, that's very much a function of the Internet and social networking. And social networking sites and the Internet in general also have made people on the far right feel more, I think, than they would have otherwise, that they are part of a movement that is very active, that's moving forward every minute, and that's exciting.
Hmm. This is Focus. Good morning. I'm Celeste Quinn sitting in for David Inge. Our guest this morning, Mark Potok of the Southern Poverty Law Center. Listeners, if you'd like to join us with a question, a comment, 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455 by email, will-talk@illinois.edu. Let's take another call, a listener in Champaign on line one. Good morning.
Hello?
Hi there.
Good morning. I start listening a little bit late, so I hope I'm not missing or misunderstand anything. But at the time when I was listening, this gentleman over there is mentioned several times conspiracy theory. I think people like him are misguiding the population. And, of course, the mainstream media is helping all of it. There is no conspiracy theory. And for people like him, anybody who tries to defend the Constitution or the Bill of Rights are either racist or bigots or they're anti-American. Opposite, people, what is the conspiracy theory that the bailout and the stimulus package money are gone and they didn't go to ordinary people, ordinary businesses, which were supposed to stimulate? What is the conspiracy theory that Bush Sr. and all of the rest are saying that we're living in a new old order world right now, that we're in a war under the false pretenses and lies. Janet Napolitano says that we have to be aware of the soldiers who are coming back and try to defend their rights and their constitution, and we have to be aware of people who try to protect their jobs, their borders, the people who protect our border are vigilantes. What is the conspiracy here? Why this gentleman is misguiding and talking about conspiracy where this is part of the reality? Overspending, overtaxation, spending on wars, spending on to protect the oil companies and the big banks around the world, the International Monetary Fund, World Bank, etc. Where is the conspiracy?
Okay, I think that we might have a misunderstanding here. Mark Potok, you want to go ahead?
Well, it's slightly hard to respond to. I mean, look, what I would say is, you know, the caller mentions the New World Order and says, oh, well, the Elder Bush spilled the beans, in effect. Well, of course, the Elder Bush talked about the New World Order in a speech in which he was trying to describe the reshaping of the world after the collapse of the Soviet Union, after 1989. So, you know, this idea that was a slip of a tongue that somehow exposed this plot by global elites to oppress people out there is simply false. I'd point out that the caller talks right away. He kind of leaps into this idea of, you know, I or people like me are attacking anyone who has the temerity to defend the Constitution. We're attacking all good patriots. I would point out that that is false. What the caller suggests is defending the Constitution is somehow not allowing our representatives in Washington to vote for a bailout, to vote for a national health care plan. You know, the point is the bailout, the national or the health care reform bill, these things may or may not have been good things to do. That is certainly arguable and a matter of opinion. But they were not shoved down the throats of the American people by, you know, a Nazi dictatorship or Bolshevik evildoers. These things were passed by Democratic votes in Washington, D.C., according to the rules of our Constitution. So, you know, it's this fantasy that is created by people like the caller, by people in the so-called patriot movement, that what is happening out there is unconstitutional. They seem to forget that if they disagree, they have every right to go out and do what they can to throw their representatives out. In 2 years, this fall, every member of the House of Representatives is up for reelection. So it just seems perfectly obvious that this is essentially propaganda, right? I mean, to accuse your enemies of subverting the Constitution. I don't know what the caller is talking about when he says the Constitution is somehow being defied or defiled.
Yeah, and everyone has the right to stand up and say, I'm overtaxed, I'm overregulated, or I'm not regulated enough, or I'm not taxed enough.
That's right. And, in pointing out the many conspiracy theories, I'm not trying to make an argument in terms of the policies one way or the other. The Obama administration is always right. Healthcare reform is what we need. We're not making that argument whatsoever. Or immigrate, the border needs to be wide open. We should let anybody in who wants to come in. We as an institution are not remotely making those arguments. We're saying, let's move ahead. Let's, as a democratic society, let's debate these things. But, when the health care reform bill is passed legally, constitutionally, then let's not do what certain people in the patriot movement and even the Tea Party movement have done. It's worth remembering that immediately before the final health care vote, a certain militia leader, a guy who now heads a patriot group called the Three Percenters, a man named Mike Vanderbeau, here in Alabama, wrote an enraged, furious blog post calling on all who opposed the health care bill to throw bricks through the windows of Democratic Party headquarters and congressmen's offices. And indeed, in the next 48 hours, at least five or six people did that. In addition, one person cut a gas line, a propane gas line, to what they thought was a congressman's house in Virginia. In other words, it sounds a lot like attempted murder. Well, the way they got to that house was a local Tea Party leader in Virginia posted the man's address and said, drop by the congressman's house and let him know what you think about his vote for the health care package. These are not democratic actions, to say the least. They are the actions of thugs.
Let's take another call. This listener is in Ivesdale waiting for us on line two. Hello.
Hey, good morning. I had a question that you may or may not be able to answer, but maybe speculate on. I can just hang up and listen to the answer. But at some level, these groups and such are monitored. And I was curious if you're just surfing the Internet and out of curiosity, you want to visit one of these websites or something to see what they're doing. Some of them are actually laughable. But do you then become a marked person and are monitored and such? I mean, I've heard that. I really don't care. If I was monitored, they'd get so bored they'd be falling asleep. But is there do you become like sort of on a list then and are monitored from there on out? Or do you have any thoughts on that? And I just, you understand my question?
Yeah, I think I understand the question.
Okay, I'll just hang up and listen then. Hey, thanks.
to answer the question, I certainly, we absolutely don't do that, and I'm positive that the government doesn't do that as well. I guess I can't speak absolutely definitively, but it's clearly would be unconstitutional. Police agencies can't start files on groups, even with very radical group views, for instance, believing that all the Jews should be killed or something along those lines. The government cannot start files on those people, the various law enforcement agencies, as a matter of law, unless they have a criminal predicate. In other words, unless they have evidence a crime has been committed or is being planned. So the short answer is no. That's very much the kind of fear that's whipped up on a lot of these right-wing websites. They're watching us, they're monitoring all our email, and some of them go further. They're following us around in black helicopters and so on. All that said, I don't think it's any great secret that many law enforcement agencies look at certain websites like Stormfront or Vanguard News Network. These are neo-Nazi or white supremacist websites with their huge forums. And they don't, I think, really want – what they're looking for, I think, is to understand the formation of groups out there and so on, some of the radical groups, but especially looking – for commenters on these forums who are essentially making threats or sounding like they might. That is simply intelligence gathering, and I don't think there's anything at all illegal or unconstitutional about it. It's simply looking at open public forums for the kinds of things that some of the more extreme people might write.
Hmm. Do you think legitimate concerns and criticisms of the government, left and right, are being elevated to a place where we're more likely to see them have this kind of discussion, or are they lost amidst all the noise in media that we're exposed to?
I think more of the latter, lost in all the noise, all the din out there. Because as I tried to say earlier, I don't think there's been any kind of rational debate, say, about immigration. Certainly people on both sides have legitimate points to make. People who want more immigration or to legalize people who are here, and others who basically want to shut it down. But really, when the discussion is about conspiracies or the idea that Mexicans are sort of coming here to steal our daughters rather than based on the real facts of the matter, the economic pull and so on, it does nothing and brings us all further away from any kind of real knowledge about what's going on out there. Another piece of this, it seems to me, is the collapse of the traditional media. I mean, we've had, 16,000 reporters lost their jobs last year, about the same number the year before. It's very, very bad out there in terms of newspapers and even networks. And at the same time, of course, we're seeing this rise in essentially fourth, fifth, sixth-hand opinion, the blog world. And meanwhile, the cable news stations, you do get these people like Lou Dobbs and some of the others who look to most viewers like real news people or anchor people, but in fact are merely people giving their opinions, are essentially editorialists.
I find myself from time to time quite disturbed when I read comments posted following online newspaper articles. For better or for worse, anyone and everyone has the ability to shout out rather anonymously.
That's right, and I think the anonymity has a lot to do with what people are willing to say. Around the country, right after Barack Obama was elected, long before he was actually inaugurated, you may remember there was a real nasty backlash, and you had just the kinds of sites you're talking about, mainstream newspaper sites. You go to a place like the Chicago Tribune and read the comments. And sometimes you'd run across these threads with hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of really patently racist comments about the president. So, yeah, I think the anonymity of the Internet very much encourages that kind of thing. It's a lot like pornography, right? I mean, if nobody's looking over your shoulder, you're a lot more willing to go exploring that world than if you had to do that in some way publicly.
This is Focus on WILL. I'm Celeste Quinn sitting in this hour for David Inge. We have about 8-9 minutes left in this portion of the program. Our guest today is Mark Potok. He is the director of the Southern Poverty Law Center's Intelligence Project and the editor of its quarterly journal Intelligence Report. The journal's focus for its spring 2010 issue is the report Rage on the Right. Listeners, you can join us this afternoon. Excuse me, this morning with a telephone call or by email, 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area, toll-free 800-222-9455. The email address, will-talk@illinois.edu. Today was the date set earlier this month for a bond hearing to determine if members of a militia group calling themselves the Huatari will be allowed out on bond while awaiting trial. What can you tell us about this group and how it came to be? And when did your organization, the Southern Poverty Law Center, pick up on them?
Well, we've been monitoring them along with a lot of other groups for about a year now. So early last year was when we first picked them up. They are a remarkable case. Many listeners may remember 8 men and 1 woman were arrested. And what they were charged with was a very elaborate plot, which involved murdering a local police officer, just any old police officer who ever happened to cross their path, then to wait for the funeral of that officer. And their idea was, and not an unrealistic one, that hundreds of police officers from around the state and other states as well would come to attend the first officer's funeral. Their plan then allegedly continued. Their idea was they were going to attack the funeral with IEDs, with improvised explosive devices, as well as missiles, actually shoulder-fired missiles. So it was quite an amazing thing. And the thought was that this would set off an insurrection nationally, and the so-called New World Order and all the rest of it would be, you know, overthrown and return to the Constitution and all would be well. What was one of the more interesting things, quite apart from the enormity of the plot about the Huatari militia, was that they very much explicitly pictured themselves as a Christian militia. They had a flag that involved a form of the cross. Unlike a lot of the militia groups, they identified the enemy. They really didn't use the words New World Order, but they were describing a very similar entity out there, a kind of evil cabal. They speculated on their website at great length about the idea that this was led by the Antichrist, who they suspect, but were not quite sure, was Javier Solana, who, of course, was a leading European Union deputy and essentially also an EU, rather United Nations, official for many, many years, and so symbolizes all of these transnational organizations that the Patriot Movement and others on the right hate so very much.
Let's take a call from a listener in Bloomington, Line 4, Bloomington, Illinois. Good morning.
Yeah. Hello?
Go ahead.
There is an element that wants to get back to the Constitution, and I've done some reading on it. As I understand it, they don't understand the concept of interpreting the Constitution in light of 2010, but I don't really understand much, and I wondered if you could kind of expound on that. Thank you.
Well, I'm not sure. Yeah, I think there's truth to what the caller says, that they don't seem, you know, they're very literal, certainly, in their reading of the Constitution. I don't think that's the core of the problem, though. I think it's more often the kind of thing we heard from a couple of callers ago. It's just an assertion, a flat assertion that is made again and again by groups on the radical right, as well as many of the Tea Party followers and even leaders. And let me say parenthetically that I'm not describing the Tea Party groups as extremist per se. I don't think that's true, although they do contain some extremist elements. But just that, I think that, you know, these groups say, they simply flatly assert that the Constitution has been stolen, it's being defied, that socialism has come to this country. You know, but what's never said was what exactly is it in the Constitution that the government or the Obama administration or the elites in society, whoever the supposed enemy is, what exactly are they doing that the Constitution says they should not be doing? I think it's a chimera. I mean, this is just it's a straw man that's been set up. You know, as I say, these groups repeatedly make the assertion that the Constitution is being defied or has been stolen or subverted, but they never really say quite why they're saying that, other than a series of conspiracy theories about sort of the Bolsheviks having seized control of our government and so on.
What is known about how and why people come to embrace an extremism that, for example, in the case of the Huhtari, advocates a war against the government?
Well, I think there are a number of different kinds of reasons. You know, certainly, for instance, many of the young people we see go into racist skinhead gangs and neo-Nazi groups and so on. In other words, the really hardline groups, much more often than not, do not join those groups because they hate black people, they hate the Jews, they hate gay people. A lot of studies have shown that a very sizable number of people who come in, especially young people coming into the radical right, the various formations of the right, are coming in for completely personal reasons. They've got a lousy life at home for some reason or other, a dysfunctional family. Maybe their father's not around anymore. Their mother works all the time. These are people who are essentially trying to create, as sociologists would say, an alternative family. Their own family is in bad shape or doesn't exist really at all, and they go out essentially on the street and cry and create an alternative family. I mean, this is the same sociology that underlies, you know, why do young girls join some of these girl gangs that we see out there, criminal gangs, not political gangs. So there is that, I think, very strong element. I remember we did a whole youth issue some years ago, and an enormous number of the people who wound up in prison for racist hate crimes and so on really did come in, as I've said, not based on any ideological leaning. The other piece of it, though, I think, and I think you see this especially strongly in the so-called patriot movement, is people who are really convinced by the propaganda. I think that generally you see older people coming into the patriot movement. It's not, you don't see the same kinds of 15, 16, 17, 18-year-olds swelling the ranks. It's more older people who seem to be trying to explain something that they think is happening to them or is about to happen to them. You know, why did I lose my job? Why is our family in trouble? Why are we losing the family farm? You know, those kinds of things. And it is simply, and this is essentially the scapegoating phenomenon. It's very complicated to say, well, you know, this is a global situation. Basic steel is moving abroad because the world economy is knit together in ways that it wasn't 50 years ago. And, you know, ultimately this means that you or your dad lost a job at the steel mill. Well, you know, it's much easier to identify an enemy, either a racial enemy, you know, it's because black people or Mexican people moved into my neighborhood, or to identify a kind of conspiratorial enemy. It's because evil cabals in the federal government are seeking to do us in.
So two red flags are fear and anger.
I think that's right.
Yeah. There we will leave it. We're out of time. Mark Potok, thank you very much for talking with us this morning.
And thank you so much for having me.
Mark Potok is the director of the Southern Poverty Law Center's Intelligence Project and the editor of its quarterly journal, Intelligence Report. The journal's focus for its spring 2010 issue is the report, Rage on the Right.
WILL programs are made possible by Bevere Cafe. Bevere Cafe serves breakfast and lunch from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Monday through Friday, and an after hour till 3 p.m. featuring soups, sandwiches, salads, ice cream, and specialty coffees. Bevere offers Wi-Fi. Daily menus are available online at bevercafe.illinois.edu.
It is 1 minute before noon. This is Illinois Public Media, WILL, 580 AM and 90.9 FM, HD2 and HD3 Urbana. You'll find us online at will.illinois.edu. In Kansas City, May wheat is currently trading at 493. That's up 2.5. July, 503.75, up 2.75. Chicago May wheat, 479, up 3. July, 491.25, up 3.25. May corn, 348. Make that 349, down 3.25. July, 355.5, down 4. September, 363, down 5. December, 370.75, down 5.75. May soybeans 987.25 down 11.5. July 997.25 down 11.75. August 992, make that 994 latest tick, down 11.5. September 975.75 down 13.75. November 963.75 down 13.75. May meal 288.70 down 590. May oil 39.19 down 10. April live cattle 97.85 down 167.5. June 93.55 down 195.